Dear Shooter, today we're jumping headfirst into that age-old debate that just won't die. 9mm versus 45. You know, it's basically the firearms equivalent of asking whether pineapple belongs on pizza, which it doesn't. We're not going to rehash that same old argument for long, anyway. We're going to take a stroll down the yellow brick road of calibers, checking out what's actually new in the game, what's just marketing hype with a fancy new name, and some rounds that make you scratch your head and say, what the fuck? And here's a curveball for you. We've got a spicy little topic that might raise some eyebrows. Turns out, Mary Jane and firearms might not be the mortal enemies we've always thought they were.
It's not about protecting the stupid. It's just, it is what it is.
I don't know if you know this, but I'm a self-identifying llama. And it's because I have a quick temper and I like to spit.
You are not safe and you are not sacred and you're both liars.
We're talking about firearms, y'all.
Keep it clean.
I can hide one under there.
One what? I want to know.
I look like I got ran over by a paint truck on the way to Sherwin-Williams and then backed over by the short bus.
You know, let's talk about the modern trends in transsexual transitions.
Welcome to the Dear Shooter podcast. Dear Shooter is brought to you by WyoTech, empowerment through self-reliance, and by Lucid Optics, on target, under budget.
Well, how's that for a happy Thursday? 9 versus 45, we're going after this again.
Isn't everybody?
Oh, my God. I thought we ended this thing.
You're never going to end this thing.
Two world wars!
Because by the time all the FUDs die, we're going to have a new generation that's looking for something else.
Well, it's going to be 10 millimeter. You just watch.
And it's coming. The unrealistic comparisons are rampant. If you read any magazine lately, they're trying to compare the .30-06 to the .22 rimfire.
Wait, what
are the benefits between them?
Wait, what? I'm sorry. I'm not going to hunt little fluffy bunny rabbits with a .30-06. There'd be nothing left to eat.
Again, but you know, there's drastic contrast to be drawn between the two cartridges.
Well,
so
duh, yeah.
Obviously, it's worth writing an article on.
Are they really running out of material?
Yes.
Is this where we're at?
Clearly. The last one I saw, they were trying to compare the 6.5 Creedmoor to the 7mm mag.
No.
Which one's a better hunting cartridge?
What are you hunting?
Correct.
I mean...
Again, this is the world we're living in writer's land.
I mean, it's gone from it's not even a comparison. You've gone into ridiculous land.
Correct.
Fine. Here's my take on the 9mm versus 45 debate.
Wrong.
I'm sure I am, but because I come at this because I. When I really started getting into the firearms world 20 years ago, I was diehard 40 cal, right? Because in my mind, it gave me the benefits of both 45 and 9. I felt it was the best of both worlds. And then I learned a few things. And I have gone pretty much exclusively to 9.
Why?
Okay. I'll give you four reasons.
All right.
Number one, 9mm is faster. And it's faster because it is a lower recoil than 45. I can shoot more 9mm rounds in the same amount of time than I can a 45. And it's physics. You can't get around it.
Okay, we're going to circle back to that one. But okay.
Higher capacity.
Higher capacity. I can carry more bullets. Okay? Lower cost. I can buy more bullets for the same amount of money. And in the self-defense world, bullet technology caught up, right? So the expansion rates, the type of bullets that they're producing now, they're giving you as good, if not better, performance than 45 was 20 years ago when this was really hotly debated. Still, led then. Again, I don't know.
It's still being debated.
Yeah.
So, all right. So those are your four reasons?
Those are my four reasons.
All right. So when we look at evaluating a caliber, for a certain activity.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to go back to something I always preach on, application orientation.
Agreed.
What are you using it for?
Yes.
Right? While a 9mm is cheaper,
mm-hmm.
I don't know that it's faster than a 40, and if it is, it's not by much.
No, I'm not saying faster is in velocity. I'm saying faster recovery from recoil.
Okay, so that's a different thing. That's operational condition.
Right.
Now, a guy that's 6'5", 400 pounds, he's going to shoot differently than you do.
So yes, that's what I evaluate on. But I'm evaluating it in terms of self-defense.
Okay, but fair enough. That needs to be made clear in the evaluation.
Right.
Because when you compare, say, for example, like you just did, a 40 caliber versus a 9, mm-hmm. right? Yes, 9's cheaper to shoot. If it's faster than a 9, it's not by much, but the 40 cal.
Oh, again, I'm talking about faster recovery from recoil.
Right, but that's...
meaning I can shoot more bullets.
Yes, but that's dependent on your refined mechanics, your body mass, your grip
position.
But
you're talking about variables we have no control over.
Right.
I'm talking about the physics of it.
Which means you can't evaluate that as a umbrella statement overall.
Yes, I can,
no,
because I'm talking about the physics.
Yeah, so am I. So if it has a faster recoil impulse and it doesn't kick as hard, I would agree with you. That would then dictate that it's easier to control.
Right, but
however,
and that's for everybody.
No, it's not.
Yes, it is. Because, all right, you take this same 6'4", 280-pound guy, you give him a 45, and I'll bet you he can shoot a 9mm faster. All other things being equal, okay, a 45 1911 versus a 9mm 1911, he's going to be able to put more rounds downrange in the same amount of time with the 9mm as he could with that 45.
All right, let's keep on one cartridge at a time.
Even with the 40.
If you're going to use it as an evaluation, you have to state your model and your circumstance.
I just did.
You didn't.
I did.
You talked about a 40 in your initial intro. Now we're on a 9, and now you're talking 45. 50 AE, what are we going to talk about next?
Well, no. The argument was 9 versus 45.
But now you see what happens to writers. They start down this rabbit hole, and somebody on social media goes, yeah, but.
Well, yeah, there's always a yeah, but.
Correct. And that's what I'm illustrating here.
And well, yeah, but here's
the
thing.
You just did it again.
Yes, I am. Okay, yes, but. And this is something that I preach in everything that I teach. There are no absolutes.
Correct.
Okay? It's never, never, and it's never always.
Right, and back to my statement I've said before. When second you say the best.
Right.
You're an asshole.
Right.
You haven't tested everything. There's no way for you to say that statement definitively.
No. 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 And it's...
But when you're drawing a line between two cartridges, 9 and 45, let's just go right to the meat of the heart of what we're talking about.
Right.
They are two different worlds.
They are.
They are completely different applications. However, they are deemed to be both self-defense rounds.
Yes.
Okay. 9mm, you're going to get more capacity out of the firearm.
Yes.
More is better. When we're talking about ammo capacity,
yeah, absolutely.
More is better. More controllable recoil.
Yes.
9. Wins there, check, right?
Mm-hmm.
Putting mass down range, that's stopping power. 45 has an edge there.
It does.
It doesn't have a penetration edge, but it has that stopping power.
But what is your self-defense distance?
9 to 15 feet,
yep.
Generally.
I'm still going to have more hammer with a 230 grain projectile than I am with 115.
All right.
Because you want to get gooey and gooey too.
All right.
Because
let
115 is going to penetrate, right? It makes it a more lethal option. We hear when we wear winter clothing, a 45 can be defeated by Carhartts.
Yes. So but let me throw a kink in that though. All right. When I talk about our whole argument about being able to shoot the 9 faster, right? Okay. And let's say in 2.5 seconds you get 3 rounds off of that 45. In the same 2.5 seconds, I can get off 5 with a 9. Okay, that gives me an extra 240 rounds or 240 grains going downrange.
Your gun's bigger than mine.
No, because I'm getting 2 more rounds.
Oh, Jesus, genetics, Pee-wee, have a sense of humor.
But
I understand what you're saying.
Yeah.
But cartridge to cartridge, one at a time.
Oh, yeah, one at a time.
This is what we're evaluating.
Right.
Right? Controllable recoil. You can get back on target and have that option for plan B, faster with a less recoiling firearm.
Right.
Correct. Not a dispute.
Yeah, I'm not. Like, I'm not trying to like pick a fight here, and I'm not trying to poo-poo
no, but,
the 45.
But the people who make these comparisons, that's exactly what they're doing. They're picking a fight.
Yeah.
They want to draw a line, fictitious or not.
I think they just want to make us argue.
Well, and they do. It's exactly what they want to do. And I'm a 1911 45 kid. I love them.
I know you do.
But I carry a 9. Why? More rounds.
I'm guessing the four reasons I just stated.
A good close, not completely the four reasons you just stated. Mine are a little bit different, but similar. And you'll never get me to agree otherwise. But the contrast between two cartridges has to be started with what are we doing?
Right.
Right.
And everything. How many times do we go back to this?
All
like it depends
time.
On your what you're doing with it.
So hey, listeners, plan out. What are you doing?
Didn't you have an antelope hunter want to come out with a 338 Lapua?
He did.
And
he
you
did.
Talked him out of that. Yes.
Well, because we didn't need to take it home in a Ziploc bag as goo.
Well, he maybe he wanted it all ground.
Yeah, more Slurpee like.
And then I watched that guy shoot. And no, we did not want 9 rounds of 338 in antelope. But I digress.
You might have knocked it down the first time.
We have too many, you know, oil rigs and gas rigs out there for him to be playing that game.
And see, back to 9mm versus 45, over penetration's a thing.
Right.
And on one hand, you want it to penetrate.
Mm-hmm.
On the other hand, you don't want it to go any further than you intended to go.
Well, I think with technology, like the bullet technology that we have today, I think we have been able to not necessarily eliminate, because there are so many factors, but I think that we have a more consistent rate of expansion. We've got the bullets dumping their energy when they hit the target. You know, the over penetration thing doesn't concern me like it used to 10 years ago.
And I completely agree with you. The bullet expansion thing has changed the game quite a bit.
Right.
In that same mindset, a common contrast I like to see all the time is 380 versus 9mm.
Okay.
People down and cuss the 380 when that's unwarranted. It's misunderstood.
I agree. I think 380 is a great cartridge.
Well, it's 9mm short. It's 200 feet a second slower.
Okay.
It solves your over-penetration issue.
Yeah.
It increases your manageability.
Yeah. You can carry even more ammo.
It's often packaged in a really small, expert pistol, short-barreled.
That is the downside to it. Now, you have a 1911 and 380 that's a little Rock Island that's nice.
I do. It is snappy, though.
But it's a small 1911,
well,
too.
Well, and it's snappy because the slide is, the, you know, your recoil impulse is so much higher over your hands than it would be in a polymer frame.
But if it was offered in a full-size frame, apples to apples, just like the 9,
yeah,
I bet you would favor the 380 for a carry gun.
Well, I do. I have a 380 that's full-sized.
And it will do everything in 9 to 10 feet. That a 9mm would do.
Mm-hmm.
I saved a dog from
a
raccoon with my 380.
Exactly right. So when we draw comparisons, you got to cut through the marketing hype and then the FUD ego that's making the comparison. And marketing hype's bad.
You know, I thought, I kind of figured, you know, 2024, the FUDs would kind of be drowned out by, you know, logic.
The average age of a gun writer is 68.
So it's kind of like our government. It's exclusively run by geriatrics.
In a lot of ways. And those that aren't in the geriatric crowd were trained by a geriatric guy.
Yep.
And so they're still drinking the Kool-Aid.
Right.
So when you read an article and you see the headline, which is better?
Yeah. The best. The 10 best.
Right. You got to understand that they are paid to support something in that article, maybe all of those things in the article to a certain degree.
Right.
And they come to it from a financial bias.
Mm-hmm.
Very rarely in these discussions do you see in the arena of X, these cartridges excel.
Right.
They don't do that. I mean, they will drown you in tech specs and baffle you with bullshit until you don't even know what you just read.
God, maybe I should be a gun writer and start writing some of these. Hey, here's 10 cartridges that would work really well for X.
Right. So I'm making the point, when you see this comparison that you come across your desk, evidently, of 9mm to 45, God's cartridge.
I think somebody just didn't have anything to write about this week.
They're regurgitating an old comparison that's been done for the past 50 years.
Yeah.
There's nothing new in that conversation.
No, there's not.
There's really not.
So you brought one to me today. 338 ARC.
Yes. Brand new hotness from Hornady.
Now, is it new or is it just renamed?
I think the rocket doctor over there is just getting bored.
Well, I will tell you that in the cartridge world, I have learned over the years that there's really not too much new under the sun.
No, that's the first thing I asked you was, like, what, are they just not selling enough 300 Blackout? Or?
Well, there's another one, the 300 Blackout. When AAC brought that out, it wasn't new. All they had done is got a SAMI specification for the 300 Whisper. They're identical.
Mm-hmm.
So back to 338 ARC, it is designed to run out of an AR-15. It is designed specifically for that hog hunting, thermal hunting, throwing a big heavy pill, and that balancing supersonic versus subsonic out of a carbine, right? That's what it's made for. The problem is Hornady's going to tell you that it's new.
Right. What is it?
Well, you've got the 338 Spectre, which is identical.
Mm-hmm.
Except the bolt face is a .420.
Okay.
That is the really only functional difference. And then you got 338 Lehigh.
Okay.
Which is a shade longer of a cartridge. I mean, by shade, still would work in an AR, right? And it runs the same bolt face as the ARC, a .441.
Okay.
So there's two cartridges already on the market that do so much of a fractional of the exact same thing that I have a hard time when Hornady says, our new cartridge, check this out.
Okay, that's because the other two cartridges you talked about, I haven't really heard of, so they didn't sell well. And what's selling right now? The 6 ARC. This ARC.
It's a new. It's the new shiny, yeah.
So they just renamed it.
Yeah. Well, and they probably did reduce the neck by 1/100,000 or something.
Right.
To make their own classification under SAMI. However, it's not new. We've had this cartridge for a very, very long time. You've had it available to you in an AR platform through Tepejetsu for a very long time.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you know Tepejetsu through the 458 SOCOM.
Right.
Which is not too different than the 458 Hammer. And we had that conversation when the SOCOM came out.
Right.
The 458 Hammer was about 150, 200 feet a second faster because it had like 4 grains different in case capacity.
Right.
But it still spit the same pill out of an AR-15 designed to stop and break engine blocks.
Yep.
Right? So when you look at the cartridges, there's not a whole lot new. There's just not.
All right, so let me ask you this. This 338 Blackout, will it chamber in a 5.56?
So 338 Blackout, so you're talking about 8.6 Blackout. Don't change gears on me just yet.
Or no, I'm sorry. The 338 ARC.
Yes.
Will it chamber in a 5.56 the way a 300 Black will?
In an AR-15 lower, yes.
Crap. So now I have yet another caliber to worry about.
That's correct. And it what's interesting about the 338 ARC is it is designed to perform and expand at that subsonic velocities.
Right.
Which both the Spectre and the Lehigh did very well as defensive rounds for those guys that did close quarters work.
Mm-hmm.
The reason you haven't heard of the Spectre or the Lehigh is they were predominantly military contract driven. They wanted to be subsonic and the Hammer of God. There was no questions. It was one shot, put a man down.
So is that why we're renaming so civilians can have it?
Maybe it might be part of the marketing solution of it all. It's still not a new cartridge, right? And that's my entire point with it. A couple of years ago, they came out with the 8.6 Blackout, right? So that is a short-action cartridge. Has to be run out of an AR-10 or a bolt gun.
Right.
And it is the exact same thing as the 338 Whisper. That was designed 15 years before that.
Yeah.
So it's about marketing. It's about your SAMI spec. And just because it's the new shiny doesn't mean that it's necessarily better than what was out there beforehand. I have a book that sits on my desk. It's called Cartridges of the World. and they're in the 17th edition of this damn book. And now, since 338 ARC's out, you're going to see another edition of this book, because there's a whole handful of folks that are developing stuff all the time,
right,
and they think they're reinventing the wheel.
So talk to me about, I'm looking at your list here, 22 ARC?
Yes. 22 ARC came out last year, and it's exactly the same thing as the 224 Valkyrie.
God, I hate that round.
Well, one's Hornady and one's Federal, so we're talking about Ford Chevy.
I don't care. Like, the 224 Valkyrie, I have nightmares about that cartridge.
See, in the bolt guns that I had it configured in, because we helped pioneer the twist rates through Shaw,
right,
for that round, because in the beginning, the 1/8 and 1/7 twists were not stabilizing the 90-grain projectiles. So what we did is we worked with Shaw to have some custom twist rates made and some barrel lengths made, and we found out that it's the 6.5 twist that actually stabilizes the 90s the best.
Right.
You can get away with the 7, but it's not right. Out past about 400 yards, it starts to fall apart.
Mm-hmm.
That's why you hate it.
I remembered all that. Yeah.
Right. And so it comes down to barrel as well as cartridge. Things have to be matched up.
Well, and I've even said on this show, like, I've had to eat my words on the 224 Valkyrie, because I had a guy come to long range class, gun writer actually, and he had that 224. He was first round hits at 13. So
he had the right barrel.
He did.
And the right setup.
It was built right. I believe it was a Wilson Combat.
But they came out with the Valkyrie, and Federal had a bunch of marketing dollars behind it, mm-hmm, and a bunch of guns decided they were going to chamber it. And nobody stopped to ask what the twist rate should be.
Right.
And so we had a year of production in the Valkyrie of firearms that the cartridge wouldn't shoot in.
Right.
It's not the cartridge's fault that the gun maker screwed it up. And then we find ourselves in that situation a lot in,
yep,
this industry. We march ahead because it's a great marketing and a good time, but we fall short in the execution.
So basically what you're saying, if we have entered Jurassic Park land, where just because we can doesn't necessarily mean we should.
And if you do, know what you're doing. Get involved on the actual physics and science of it.
Supposedly those people knew what they were doing too, and I've seen those movies.
A lot of times they grab a barrel off the rack that has a blank, and it's, you know, of the right caliber blank.
And they have the tooling to make the twist.
They ream the cartridge.
Yeah.
And they run it, and in their test range at 50 to 100 yards, whatever they've got, it shoots just fine. So then they make 10,000 of those guns.
Yeah.
And people try and reach out with them, and they find out, well, maybe it's not just fine.
So is there a cartridge out there that's actually new?
Not to my knowledge.
Mm-mm.
Every now and then you see something that's interesting. You're seeing adaptations of a good cartridge. When the 6.5 Creedmoor Blasphemy came out in the 308 world, they got it right. They improved the efficiency of a cartridge that was based on the 308 case and proved that a little bit lighter projectile would deliver a flatter projectile trajectory. Get all those words all said right. And it is more efficient, and it does reach a little better. The nominal gas you miss on the kinetic energy downrange, you really don't miss.
No, you don't. And that comes to bullet technology.
Correct.
Back like we were saying with the 9 versus the 45.
Then they adapted a 6mm Creed.
That thing. Whew.
They're taking advantage of the inherent accuracy and
of
balance
the 243
of a 6mm.
So what
projectile.
About, so
yeah,
gun sales have gone down. So we invent a shiny new projectile, so we make shiny new guns, so people buy more guns.
That might be part of it.
That is marketing 101 if you're a gun maker. You talk somebody into developing a cartridge, typically Federal or Hornady, so you can chamber something new and have something to show.
So basically, all the rounds are what the fuck?
Look, the Remington 700 is the most proliferated rifle action on the planet.
Mm-hmm.
There are a ton of clones on it because it is the most popular action on the planet. There's nothing new in a Remington 700 action. However, it's the go-to for Weatherby, for Bagheera, for Remington, for all these companies. It's a patterned clone of an action. Nothing new. rifle technology from a barreled standpoint, very little new. Metallurgy's gotten better.
Mm-hmm.
The process of button rifling has gotten better. We've learned a lot of lessons in long boring that make things straighter, right? Things get better over time incrementally. That doesn't necessarily mean it's new, right? So the only thing new you can do is put a new fancy name on a cartridge, call it new, and have everybody in the industry chamber it. Now everybody's got a new gun to sell.
Yeah, well, what was it? Last year, or was it 2 years ago at SHOT, everybody came out with the retro ARs?
Yes. All the old 1968
that fell flat on
their face. Yep. And one of my good friends, John Petty, he does high-end walnut furniture in mm-hmm. the retro look for your AR.
I've seen those. They're cool.
They're gorgeous. But it's still a retro AR.
Right.
Right? If nostalgia in kind of, hey, sexy on the range is what you're looking for, cool. Go do that.
Yeah.
But you can't call it new.
No, and I'm sorry. My ARs are tools.
Exactly right. But, I mean, we're talking about safe queens that you're going to, you know, go take out with your friends.
I don't have any of those.
I know. So your collection needs to have it has a gap in it.
I don't have a revolver in there either.
Oops.
I know. I got some gaps. Christmas is coming.
There you go.
Bite me.
That's funny. That's really funny.
All right. So let me pay some bills before we switch gears here, because this next one is, this threw me for a loop. The 10th Mountain Whiskey and Spirit Company, based in Vail, Colorado, high up in the Rocky Mountains. 10th Mountain is a tribute company to the legendary 10th Mountain Division, maker of fine spirits, including bourbon, rye, and vodka, as well as being a generous supporter of the shooting sports and veterans charities. Support those that support us. And to make it easier, 10th Mountain is offering our listeners a discount. Just enter Dear Shooter at checkout for 10% off. 10th Mountain Whiskey and Spirits Company. Whiskey worth fighting for. All right, so this one threw me. And my immediate thought was, oh, Colorado. Turns out it's Texas. But the Fifth Circuit Court of Appeals just upheld a district court ruling that the prohibition on firearm possession by marijuana users is unconstitutional.
Oh, my, my, my.
So, you know, my first thought was, all right, go Colorado. But
well, I see the language that they're doing here.
Mm-hmm.
And that will erode a question on the 4473.
Yes, it will.
Or make it be reworded regardless.
Right.
And the ATF will have to take a different stance on how they evaluate that question.
Well, I think the ATF is going to have to pucker up here the next 4 years.
I agree with you. But in regards to this topic specifically, Hunter Biden, he launched this defense as well.
Yes, he did. And I'm wondering if this is what spawned this case originally.
It could be.
And this is the U.S. versus Connolly.
Okay. Interesting. So we now have two courts with case law precedent.
Yes.
That's going to change the world in the FFL side, because I can no longer have that question be such a stringent deny.
Well, in part of the ruling, the short of it is that our history and tradition may support some limits on a presently intoxicated person's right to carry a weapon, but they do not support disarming a sober person based solely on past substance usage. It's no different than you're sitting here having a bourbon.
Correct.
I should take your guns away because you use drugs.
Interesting statement.
That, I mean, that's...
It's like banning cars from folks who drink.
Right. I honestly think they made the right call here.
I think they did too. But you're seeing little itty bitty pieces like this. The more and more of them we have, we're going to question a whole lot of bigger things.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you ever have that sweater that's got that one snag, and you pull on that thread, and the whole sweater unravels? They keep going like this. This is what we're talking about.
I don't wear those sweaters.
Probably because your wife fixes them for you.
Shit.
I can't sew.
Loaded question, y'all. I knew the answer to that one. That's funny. No, I think they made the right decision. And it'll be interesting to watch, because if that gets picked up by more and more states federally, there's going to be a change in the way firearms ownership is.
There's going to have to be, but I think the whole damn thing's funny. I mean, what's next? Are we going to get the doobie gun? The blunt gun?
I have an engraver. I can make one of those.
I mean, Cheech and Chong right now are cheering.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. Love those guys.
And that goes back to your marketing. And right here, I'm telling you right now, the blunt gun, the doobie gun, firing, you know, I don't know what's a roll usually, 6mm? 6mm blunt?
The 6mm, hey, dude.
Yeah.
You got to be careful. There's shoes named that already.
No, what was Obama's smoking people back in college, when they go and get high in the car? They had a name for them.
Huh.
I can't.
I am so not in the drug culture. I'm the bad guy to ask. But so what do you do? You make it a subsonic cartridge.
Right. Why would you make it subsonic?
Well, they're slower than everybody else.
Not necessarily, because there's one type that puts you down, and there's one type that picks you up. I don't know which is which, but...
You know more about drugs than I do.
I don't know.
That's impressive.
I had a father-in-law that had cancer, and that's how
he handled it. So what is that, indica and sativa?
Yeah, those two.
Yeah.
And I don't know which one does what.
Indica's the sleepy one.
Okay. All right.
So this Brandy's inner geek shows itself.
That's plants.
Inner pharmacist.
Behold my plants.
Yikes. So, yeah, I don't know how you'd market that specifically, but I think it's creating a funny subcategory, at least on the immediacy.
Yes, it is. I mean, something that, you know, shotgun that shoots seeds and stems.
Ooh.
There's a great day to bring it all out. Isn't there a date in April that has something to do with the marijuana use?
420, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So bring that gun out on that day.
There you go.
420 needs to be a caliber designation.
That's what I'm thinking.
Ooh,
we'll paint them all green.
Mm-hmm. Yes. I like it. And do the if you do the serrations on the slide just right.
You do them just like a marijuana leaf.
Yeah. Yeah.
So any investor out there that wants to help us with this idea, chime in, would you?
Oh, we could have fun with this. But going back to that, you're absolutely right. Marketing.
Mm-hmm.
And that's where we're getting all of this crazy stuff now. But there was one point I wanted to make. You were talking about the Remington 700. One of the reasons that is so popular for all the clones, for the Bagheera, for the Weatherbys, is because they have accessories out the wazoo. It's like Glock.
Correct.
I mean, everybody makes accessories for that platform.
That's right. It's an industry standard.
Right.
There's nothing new there.
I know, because when I rebuilt that Winchester 70, which is actually a pretty iconic gun and fairly popular in its time, I had a hell of a time.
Well, they didn't build accessories for those guns at that time when it was popular.
No.
I mean, you were turning it into a semi-tactical hammer of God.
Yeah, not even tactical. I found a stock that I liked, and it happened to be a tactical.
Well, you do have those tastes.
Well, it's what I prefer to shoot. It's the configuration's right.
It's comfortable.
That's one of those things that, you know, the standard hunting rifle, the standard stock on those, number one, over the last few years, you know, Remington, even Bagheera to a certain extent, I've been really disappointed in the stock. They're the molded poly. They're super light. They don't have any feel to them. And I've noticed over time, sitting in the safe, they tend to warp.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And now you've got pressure on the barrel.
Mm-hmm.
And you can't figure out why you keep throwing rounds.
And if walnut was invented today, it would be called Wonder Fiber.
Yeah.
It just holds up. It keeps all the tension of its shape. It doesn't tend to change or digress unless you force it to.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, the polymer foam that we see that stocks are built out of today, they're not the long-term solution.
No, and the other thing that bothers me on those is the way the grip is configured on them. There's no palm swell to it. There's and and the angle of it just, to me, is not right. But I think that comes from shooting competition and shooting straight grips.
Well, that comes from, the again, application. The Winchester 70 was a saddle gun,
mm-hmm.
one of the first bolt guns to actually have a low-profile bolt handle to go into a scabbard so it could be retrieved easily.
Right.
All of those things, palm swell, square fore-end, weren't a thing.
No.
And most guys back in that day, they shot offhand.
Right.
Right? They were positional shooters. They didn't use a bench. They didn't get prone that often. They shot offhand or from a kneeling position.
I'm sorry. Around here, the animals don't stand still that damn close. You got to get down. You got to get stapled. And you got to take a long damn shot.
I will tell you that those old-timers did it in this environment the same old way.
Yeah, well, there wasn't as many of them. We didn't spook them as bad. Or the other thing, they didn't have the damn environmentalist wackos going out and screwing with the hunters and screwing with the animals.
Well, you can talk a hard line all you want. For me, I need to practice that shit more because it's a perishable skill.
Oh, I agree. I totally agree.
My bench guns, my competition guns.
Can you even hold them up offhand?
I can, but not for very long.
Yeah, mine.
And when I get in a kneeling position or a seated position, I really have to stabilize and work at it. Where an older hunting rifle, a sporter, if you will, I didn't have to do that.
No.
They were balanced different. They were weighted different. A lot of times they were made too light to the point where whatever cartridge
you
chose,
butt.
Knocked your IT.
I think that's my aversion to a 270.
The sharp recoil.
That was the first gun I hunted with, and I just hated it. It was sharp recoil. Because, I mean, essentially, you're taking a 30-06 cartridge and necking it down to 27 caliber.
That's correct. It was a wildcat of the day, meant for a bench rest, long range F class match.
Yeah. Well, yeah. Deer hunting, and it hurt.
Yeah, and they do. But you weren't meant to sit down and run a string of 50 rounds. You were going to shoot it two or three times a year.
Well, yeah, but even then, like, knowing what was coming, sucked.
That's what we call the flinch.
Yeah. 7mm, 7-pound magnum. Ugh.
I did do that to you on purpose.
You did do that to me, and that's why I now run a 27-pound gun.
Wow, you overcompensated there, didn't you?
Yes, I did, but you know what? That sucker doesn't move.
Nope.
Less recoil than a 6.5 Creedmoor.
We had a guy with a shoulder surgery and a screw that was backing out. He was able to shoot that rifle of yours with confidence. It was fun.
Yeah, and it's 300 PRC.
Yeah.
You know, you put that in a light gun, that's going to,
well,
you're going to feel
it. In a light gun. You had it in a Bagheera, in a Wilderness.
Yeah, no, that I wanted it for the action.
Yeah, you shot that gun a couple times and decided, no, you were tearing it apart.
No, it actually ended up becoming a 6.5 PRC.
Yeah, you had that rebarreled. And you dropped it in a chassis.
That didn't fit. Oh, it's mad.
Well, the real is we get it too.
Now it's mine.
It is. And
you also made the, I don't know if it was subconscious rookie mistake, but you made that chassis blue.
Yeah, no.
And what's your wife's color?
Yeah, it's blue. I may have possibly done that on purpose.
Okay.
Because right. I just had a feeling.
I didn't know if you were just an idiot or if you did that on purpose. If it was on purpose, you're bordering on genius with it.
No, I did do that on purpose.
He wants to be like me.
I just think he likes your smile. Don't get me wrong.
No, I knew it, that it wasn't going to work, so I went ahead and pushed forward with the chassis in blue. Mm-hmm. Because at that point, I'd made the decision, I'm going to rechamber it in 6.5 PRC. And now you have a really long-range gun.
That needs cleaned, slave. Chop, chop.
How do you know I haven't?
You got a couple hundred rounds through it?
Yeah, but what happens, what I found out is, because we've been out and we shot it a few times and she was blowing primers. And I actually had this thing on the radar. And every time she'd blow a primer, she was pushing like 3,100 feet per second with this gun. Now, typically, she's running about 2,950, which is about where it should be. And when you see a spike of 150, almost 200 feet per second, and you're blowing a primer, there's a problem.
Agreed.
So I called Hornady, gave him the lot number, because this is all factory ammo. And he said that what they have found is with that 6.5 PRC, and you guys out there that have these 6.5 PRCs, you might look for this. It will, after 100, 150 rounds or so, it will start to develop a carbon ring. And if you don't remove that, get it cleaned out of there, you'll start getting overpressures and blowing primers.
I ran into that with a 7 PRC. And these cartridges are fast. They are incredibly neat. Don't know that I can call them necessarily new. They're an unbelted version thereof, but they do have the carbon ring problem. Now, I don't know if that is a powder issue or a overblown cartridge issue, but it's definitely an issue.
Yeah, and the explanation I got was that it was because they've necked that cartridge down so far that that's what's getting it. Now, I don't know that I ever really got an explanation of why that caused it, but
the customer service dude didn't know.
No, he didn't.
That'd be cool if he did.
I know, because I kept trying to get their powder recipe for the 6 arc. He wouldn't give it to me. So back to the drawing board on that. Mm-hmm. So I guess until next week, I guess you guys are going to hear us on Thanksgiving. Good luck with your families.
I drink. It'll be fine.
Yeah. You know. And so what? What are we saying on this one? Keep blaming your cartridge?
Yes. All right. Twist rate.